Today, we have a wonderful array of guests coming from California to Vermont. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt. Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program devoted to the exploration of the visual arts. My co-host Stephen DeLuque and I produce it here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Last week, we had a conversation with Henry A.J. Ramos, who is both an artist and a community activist. We'll start today's program with a little bit more of that conversation with Henry. Last week and this week, the focus is on an exhibit currently on display at Studios on the Park in Paso Robles. The theme of the show is immigration. The title of the exhibit is E Pluribus Unum, From Many, One. And the artists, Latino and Latina, come from around the state of California. After our finish-up conversation with Henry Ramos, I will talk with one of the artists, Yolanda Guerra, who comes from San Jose. She is a fiber artist, printmaker, and teacher. After her, we'll hear from Henry A.J. Ramos's brother, Gregory, who heads the theater department at the University of Vermont. He is a playwright and director and is presenting one of his plays as part of this exhibit. Unfortunately, that has already taken place, but it seemed very important to hear his story. We finish up with Josue Rejas. More about his project as we begin that part of the interview. For now, we pick up with Henry A.J. Ramos. I was asking him how often he's able to be in his studio and how that experience shapes the rest of what he does. When you return to your own studio, what does that do? To rejuvenate, to depress, to excite? What goes on when you're in that space?
Great question, Chris. It's probably a little bit of all of the above, but I think mostly, like any creative person, you find inspiration from creative people. It's like, you know, if you love good food, the more good food you eat, the more good food you want. The more we surround ourselves with really creative, interesting people who are asking important questions, bringing perspectives that may be provocative, but that are important to our sense of self and history, I think the better off we all are. The more rounded we are as human beings, and the more truth we can find in that search for what science and art and intellect is always ultimately all about, the search for truth.
And Stephen has been able to come in. Once again, Stephen, we're talking about cross-fertilization. In this case, it's immigration and art.
Mm-hmm. Actually, my father was an immigrant from Spain.
What was the process?
It was a rather long, involved process. His father was a carpenter, and they were looking for laborers, common laborers, for Hawaii at that time, for the pineapple fields and the sugarcane fields and things like that. My grandfather was a fine furniture maker just outside of Gibraltar. They were the last family allowed onto this boat, and it was a 48-day voyage around the tip of South America to Hawaii. My grandparents were traveling with seven children, the youngest of which was 2 weeks old, and it was a 48-day trip.
And I think it's really incumbent on every generation of Americans to understand, as we've said here, that, you know, we all have some kind of a story like this in our history, and we may be further away from it than some of the newcomers, but what makes America a great nation and distinct in the world is the fact that we have a long-standing history of tolerance and acceptance of people from different places. And if we didn't, just imagine how different our history would be looking back, but more importantly, looking forward. What if we say no to the young woman who is studying to become the next person to provide a cure for cancer? What if we say no to the person at the gate there who has some kind of a new innovation in engineering or in some other aspect of commerce or science that can be game-changing for our culture, for the world? Do we want to give that away to other countries to exploit? That would be un-American. To me, the fundamental thing that makes America unusual, different, special, exceptional, if you want to use that term, is our very readiness and willingness to embrace the best of what the world has to offer. And when we shut down our borders and we shut down our minds and we start thinking that somehow our situation is different than that of our forebears, in order to justify that, I think we are becoming suspect. We are becoming somehow unwittingly less American, even if that's not our intention. You know, and I say that with all due respect to folks who have strong political points of view, a sense of patriotism, even religion perhaps, that might guide them to a different point of view. But I think if you say that you hold the flag, you clutch the Constitution, and you have that Bible in your hand, it's hard for me to imagine how you can say that we're done with the immigrants as a part of our civic culture, as a part of our political and national identity. Our core question in the show is, what does it mean to be an American in the early 21st century? Because if being an immigrant is not part of it, we've changed radically what it means to be an American and what our society is fundamentally all about. That would be a rather unfortunate and unworthy destination for us as a country, given everything that we've experienced and all the benefits that have come from our past with these populations. We can only be better and stronger the more we're open to new talent, new commitments to our values, and new humanity that can freshen, enliven, and really invigorate our culture.
And you've indicated that this show will feature young and people who have been around the block a few
Correct.
Times, so it's going to be a very interesting mix.
Correct. We're
as I
us.
Hear it. So that seems very exciting. Again, by the time we're on air doing this, the show will have been open for a few days, but June 10th is a special one.
We highly recommend that, yeah. Both from noon to 2 for the interactive art exhibit and exchange with our artist, Josue Rojas, as well as from 7 o'clock until about 8:30, where we'll have my brother Gregory Ramos from the University of Vermont doing a group reading and a talk back with audience members around his new play, Josephine Stories.
Thank you so much, Henry.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the show.
I am Ken Pass-Rubbles at Studios on the Park. Fortunately, one of the artists in this show is here today and is willing to share some thoughts about her work. And your name?
My name is Yolanda Guerra.
Your work is mostly fiber, right?
Yeah, fiber, textile, embroidery, and woodblock prints.
Oh, that's exciting. And we're standing in front of a couple of the textile pieces, and they are wonderfully bright and colorful.
Thank you. The piece that we're standing in front of is called Jeweled Corn, and it's a mixed media piece with quilting and stenciling, silk screening, and a variety of other sorts of stuff that's in there. Most of my pieces are about corn because I really want people to understand that the importance of corn. In this time period, we have GMOs sort of taking over and destroying seeds, and it's really important that we are aware of those issues. And although it's very subtle, the colors are engaging, and I want people to be engaged to, like, when they look at corn and then start thinking about, where does corn fit in my life? That's pretty much the reason why I do a lot of pieces in corn. Part of our life, actually. I mean, if you go to Iowa, that's a really part of Iowa culture, too.
Big, yes. I have gone across those fields on a train many a time, and it's all you see for hours.
Yeah, it's a base for life. That's how I see it, and that's why I do these pieces, to honor corn and my culture, plus other people's cultures, too. And part of it, too, like, had a wonderful opportunity through the NEH program. I got accepted about 3 years ago, roughly 3 years ago, and a group of us who were teachers, I'm a high school art teacher in the Bay Area, and we went to Oaxaca, Mexico. Oaxaca changed my life, and so I've been going to Oaxaca ever since, but Oaxaca changed my life in the way that I became very open to colors, very open to understanding my own voice and what the things that are really important to me, and putting that out there. I think before that, I think I was very cautious, very conservative in what I would create, but Oaxaca did something to me, and it shifted me. So I go there every year, every summer, and so when I felt free to show more color in my work, and I feel that's more resonant to who I am as a person.
Unfortunately, I have not been there, but I
you
certainly know, yes, and I certainly know the style of work that comes out. As you say, it is all about, well, it's about a lot of things, but color is certainly one of the absolute things.
Definitely it is about color.
You have the one here about corn, mm-hmm. and then...
Then I have a piece that's honoring the issues that pertain to water and Standing Rock. And it's a very small woodblock print that's printed on fabric, and I did some embroidery with it, but it's about water is life. And that was very moving to me. And I think it's just as important as corn, of course, water. It's our life. It's just a small little piece, but honoring those people who stood up and are still standing up, and just to remind us that we all need to do the same.
Where did you start in terms of your own artwork?
I graduated from San Jose State with a Bachelor's of Fine Arts, but I've been doing art since forever. I'm a high school art teacher, and my students always ask me, well, when did you learn how to do art, or why did you do it? And it's just like, art has been my life, and I've always did art since I was little. And I only came to terms with me being an artist when I attended a junior college in my area, and I tried everything. I tried all kinds of different things. I thought I was going to be an actress, a singer, whatever. I'm not very good at that. But then when I finally took a class, I found my people. I took a class in art, and I found my people, and I'm still looking for more people that are like my people, meaning people who have the same ideas about how we do art and what the importance of art is, and focusing on political issues. So I think we all have to find the people that resonate with us, and being an artist was in me since I was little. And sewing, and those are the things that my mother taught me, like how to embroider when I was about 8. That was my first art piece, I would say. So I incorporated it within all my pieces, and because that's who I am, that's a part of me. So.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Jose, California, and my parents are from Texas.
There's another piece here on the wall.
It's a large quilt. It's honoring the 43 students who went missing in Mexico. And granted, there have been many other people who have been missing in Mexico, but this happened in 2014, or at least the awareness of that happened in 2014. And so when I heard about it, it really touched me, because these are students, or these were people who wanted to become teachers, and I could relate in that sense as a teacher. At any rate, so this piece is honoring them and memory. So on this piece, I have 43 handkerchiefs, and I've embroidered their faces on them. Along with that, I have a silkscreen hummingbirds that represent their spirit. Now, their spirit in the sense that not knowing if they passed away or they're still alive somewhere, but still those little birds representing their spirits somewhere existing in this universe and or in this country, in this land. The handkerchiefs, they're symbolic of parents and loved ones who have cried for them. And then the piece is called Lagrimas. And on there it says there's a poem or an unknown proverb. They tried to bury us. They didn't know we were seeds. And so the idea of the awareness of these issues and the importance of it. So it's a really one of my favorite pieces, and it's really moving. At least that's I've been told many times from other people who see it. So
very much so. Do you have, as we're walking down to your other pieces, just some general thoughts about what it is to be a part of this particular exhibit?
You know, it was really lovely to be invited, and I was invited by another artist who has pieces in here, and I was in a show in San Francisco at the Mission Cultural Center in the Mission, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's always lovely to be invited, and also other artists like kind of giving you a little seal of approval. So being in the show is just in this it's really gorgeous location. I think having a show of Latino artwork might kind of shed some light to what's other issues that are going on. And there's other things other than wine in these lovely valleys that are happening. And I really enjoy looking at the other artists' work, and especially some of the work that's regarding farmers, because I'm sure people who are drinking their wine may not think about those farmers who are actually picking those grapes.
Just standing in front of those photographic images, and
yes.
It's like you can't move. You're
exactly.
Just caught.
Exactly. And there are things from the earth, right? There's corn, there's, you know, the farmers who work the earth, and other pieces where people are just wanting to have a better life in the show, and or the art pieces that are reflecting that. And I think that's very powerful in this valley. And, you know, it's powerful all over just to have voices of Latino voices heard, because so much of that is in our economy in California. It's like, oh, money and wonderful things that are happening. I mean, I'm from the Silicon Valley, and I think the same issues there, you know. But all these wonderful things that are happening and this growth and economy, but we have to remember how beautiful California is and what we actually where we had actually all started, which is of the earth, things that are growing, and the beauty of that, and the beauty of the people who help support our mm-hmm. state. And I think a lot of the people are Latinos, and we have to remind people of that. Or at least I feel like I have to remind people of that.
I think it's very easy to get anywhere we live in our own cocoons.
So those of you out there who are in Paso Robles, please come down and take a look at this wonderful work done by lots of wonderful Latino artists here, Latino artists. Please come down. There's some other gorgeous pieces out here, and I think you'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you,
You're Yolanda. Welcome.
This exhibit runs through the 25th of June and features paintings, prints, photographs, and fiber art. You are listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. The majority of this program was interviewed on site, and so what you're hearing in the background is just the mix of people enjoying Studios on the Park Gallery in Paso Robles. Continuing our story about this exhibit, I'm here with playwright Gregory Ramos. We talked with your brother, and he has been the curator for this exhibit. I understand you're a playwright?
Yes, I'm a playwright. I head the theater department at the University of Vermont, and I'm also a director and professional playwright.
Tell us about what you're doing as part of this exhibit.
I recently wrote a play for young audiences called Cuentos de Josefina, Josephine's Tales. It's inspired by my paternal grandmother, who was a wonderful storyteller and a great influence in my life about the power of stories in our lives. She brought a lot of stories with her when she immigrated from Mexico and shared them with us as young people. And so I wrote this play to share with young audiences and children of all ages, as we say. And it's basically an immigration story. So it's a tribute to the family, but also is a way of introducing young people to some concepts of immigration.
Can you give a couple of little samples of something? This will air after you have finished. So.
Sure. Well, Cuentos de Josefina follows the story of young Josefina and her brother Ignacio, who are orphaned after the Mexican Revolution. And the only hope that they have for survival is to make it north, because they inherited a storybook that their mother put together of family stories. And in the margins of that book is the address of family who have already immigrated, who live in the City of Angels, Los Angeles. So they're attempting to get to the north so they can cross the border and join their family. And in order to get there, they use as inspiration the stories in the book, and every town that they arrive in, they tell one of the different fables or folkloric tales that their mother left them.
I'm sure that you feel quite honored to have all of that.
Oh, yes, very lucky. And, you know, I think the other interesting thing that the play looks at is, in addition to being a tribute, is it reminds us that people don't necessarily leave home or what they call home unless they have to. The other interesting thing about the notion of immigration, you know, as it relates to this particular part of the world, is that, you know, this geographical region that we're in right now was once part of Mexico. So quite a lot of people who we think of as immigrants were in fact not immigrating. And I think the play also reminds us in a kind of very subtle way that the notion of immigration and geographical zones or borders are completely arbitrary and complete social constructs. So it's kind of a fun way of addressing the notion of immigration. And the other piece of it is that I've always been very interested in stories, and I had the opportunity to do some research in Mexico. So in addition to speaking to folks on this side of the border from Mexican and Mexican-American families, I did travel to parts of Mexico and asked folks about folkloric tales and family tales. So the stories that are contained that Josefina and her brother Ignacio play out in the play are based on quite a number of different tales that I heard in my research.
Were you growing up hearing stories from your parents or from others?
Primarily from my grandmother. She brought, as I mentioned, stories with her from Mexico, and the tales in the play are, to some degree or another, always inspired by stories that she told us.
Do you have any sense what that might have inspired in you in terms of being a storyteller or a translator of other people's stories?
Wow, that's great. You know, I think what it really did for me is it showed me early on in my life that stories, the construct of a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, are our ways of humans in our cultures to understand very large ideas. Stories provide us a framework. They provide us characters that we're able to identify with as other human beings, and they provide a journey for us. So a story in itself kind of models our journey in life that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So I really look at stories as, and particularly theatrical stories, which I tell through plays, as frameworks through which we can understand much larger and deeper ideas and extract meaning for our own lives.
I was thinking the other day, somehow got in a conversation about just cultural stories of the beginnings of life. What you're sensing as far as that value of stories and how they can be reinterpreted, they can be completely made up?
Well, that's one of the interesting things about theater, stories in general, but in my experience doing theater, people interpret stories different ways, and it's always fascinating to me how their interpretation is based on, you know, it's very subjective. Things touch people based on their personal experiences, and other things that will touch me as a person might not touch you as a person. But it's very interesting also because at the same time that there are particulars, there are also some things that are very universal. Getting back to this particular play, I think although we're focused on a young Mexican boy and girl on an immigration story, we understand what it means to search for family. We understand what it means to need to eat. We understand what it means to go on a journey in the quest of something. So although there are some specifics involved, I'm reminded that the power of storytelling is that the more specific you are, the more universal you are. So I think there are definitely things in this particular tale that we can all identify with no matter what cultural background we're bringing to bear.
And in your teaching, what kind of classes are you responsible for?
Mm-hmm. Well, I teach primarily directing and playwriting. When I can fit it into my schedule, I teach some courses in contemporary American theater that are related to diversity. So I teach courses that look at how we as theater artists explore and respond to issues of diversity through storytelling in theater.
Thank you so much and have a wonderful time.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, you're most welcome. Although I did have to miss the presentation of the play, I was there for the other event that was happening on Saturday. It's best to have the leader of this interactive art project give you the story. Here he is.
My name is Josue Rojas. I'm an artist and a community leader in San Francisco, California.
And you are here today in Paso to help a group of other artists in a collaborative event, right?
So I'm here part of the E Pluribus Unum, which is the Latin for out of many, one. And I think that's really the spirit of what we're doing here. We have a lot of young people that are chiming in and chipping in their beautiful talents to sort of enhance the artwork. So I do work that really both is community-centered and also innovative in a way that the paintings kind of find their way out of the actual canvas and onto the wall. So we have a group of teenagers here from Paso and SLO, which is the term that I just learned today, that are just chiming in and helping us doodle and scrawl on the walls this with beauty.
Okay, so you've done an original painting, and so you've put that up, and then they are taking that idea and expanding it onto the wall.
That's exactly right. So some of the imagery really does find its way to sort of have a visual rhyme, and sort of it lives on the canvas, but it finds its way off of the canvas. So in a very real way, you know, it speaks to street art, it speaks to, an urban experience in the gallery, and it also clearly is gallery artwork. So I think the best thing is some of the unexpected. It's like the young people will always bring a piece of themselves into it, and that's exactly what I was hoping for. In a very real way, it's like a jazz piece where the art will go where it wants, and certainly art is about freedom. So I really am excited to see this envelop in front of my eyes, and these surprises are really the best part.
So the one on the far end, you do not have an actual painting that they're going off of. So did you start something or is that all theirs?
It's a combination. So there is small amounts of design, but really they're kind of riffing up on themselves. So the only limits here are color. So, you know, there's gold and blue on this left wall, and there's orange on the right wall, and this other one has gold and red. Those are pretty much the parameters, and everything else is up to them to speak on this concept of out of many, one.
And you selected these colors based on the original work?
That's exactly correct. Yeah. So it's really fun. And an hour ago, we didn't know each other. Now we all know, they know me, and they also know each other, which is really great to me. I think there's this myth that the artist needs to be working out of a dungeon, tortured by themselves, and, you know, their ear is always at risk of getting cut off. But I like to dispel that myth of the tortured artist and really think of artists working in communities with each other, and particularly with young people. So that was the way that I learned the craft of art making, and that's the way that I sort of like to teach, better put, the way that I like to push it.
A bit of clarification. All three of the interactive works include one of his original paintings, which are then expanded onto the wall. In the exhibit, he also had another body of work, one of which he explains here.
A couple of them are for sale, mostly not, though. There's one piece that that belongs to the family of this young man depicted here, Alex Nieto, who was killed by the San Francisco Police Department in 2013. And the family who the painting belongs to, who I gifted it to, they asked me to get as many eyes as possible on the painting. This is very much beautiful, and art's purpose really is to bring beauty into the world, but I also feel a charge to tell important stories of our communities with this beauty.
When this project is done, are these walls getting transported someplace, or do they get painted over?
The ones that live on the wall will be painted over, and that's something that we have to be at peace with. A mentor told me once about letting go and the practice of art making is that you'll never fear death as long as you have the promise of a new life, is when you've got that moment of invention. So it's a combination. Just when you think you know something, I think, you know, both working as an artist and once before I worked as a journalist, just when you think you know what it is, or what the story is, or what the art is, and it'll always kind of surprise you and shock you. So this is also a really great way to see how people are interpreting, you know, the work that one does and inventing. So it's fun to see new work be made. I think that's always the excitement for me.
Very exciting. Any of you folks want to say anything for the radio?
Anybody want
or are you just
radio?
Liking to be anonymous?
Let your beautiful voices be heard.
Super happy to be here.
So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
You have been listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio. Our guests today have been Henry A.J. Ramos, Yolanda Guerra, Gregory Ramos, and Josue Rojas. All of them, plus quite a few other artists, are involved in the exhibit E Pluribus Unum, From Many, One, which is on display at Studios on the Park in Paso Robles. Details can be found by going to their website. The show runs through June 25th. Hope you can make it. Co-host Stephen DeLuque and I, Chrissa Hewitt, will be back in July. Our guest will be longtime Central Coast artist Rachel Yon, a printmaker who claims to be retired, but we know full well that an artist really never stops. As always, there is much to see and do with the arts on the Central Coast. We hope you'll get out and see as much as you can. Once again, thank you so much for listening.